And welcome everybody to the second ever episode of what we now will call Trash Talk with Tommy and Stu. Welcome aboard everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Stu, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing good, Tommy. Happy Memorial Day weekend to you, buddy.
You too. Absolutely. Anything interesting happen with you this weekend? Everything status quo? How'd you do?
It's been a pretty boring weekend for me. I'm taking advantage of some downtime, so I pathetically went and saw Captain America by myself the other night. This is going to be a depressing podcast.
No, not so much. I'm not knocking to go in the movies solo thing. I'm, just the superhero stuff is tough for me, yeah. As you know. We've talked about that before.
I didn't go with a shield dressed up in spandex, but I saw a good movie. It was entertaining. It wouldn't be my top 10 of all time, but, it got the job done. But hopefully you had a – and then I watched the Warriors Game 6, which we'll get into in a bit. But I hope your weekend was a little bit more eventful than mine.
Well, I had a pretty wacky situation happen here. I'm going to give you the short version. What happened to me, as Stu mentioned in the previous podcast, I am in the bar industry. I do run a bar for a living. And, the stories that come out of that, are just endless. And this weekend was no exception. I had a young lady who used to work for me a few years back in New York City. So I'm in Orlando now. We were a little short-staffed. She lives in Tampa now. I actually we had stayed in touch, and we had kind of talked about her coming out to bartend a little bit. Now, this girl was always a little bit of a wacky, loose cannon. But for the
most girls who work in this industry tend to be.
Absolutely. And, I figured a few years later, a little more maturity set in. Maybe that's a mistake on my part. But
mistake.
I invite this girl in to work for the weekend because we actually – it was just right place, right time. I needed somebody. So she comes in on Wednesday. I don't know the baggage, and I'm not talking about luggage. I'm talking about just the emotional baggage she's coming to town with. So she's coming in from Tampa, very attractive girl, former Hawaiian Tropic model, just a bunch of, accolades in that regard, whatever else she's done. So – I didn't know what I was getting ready for. She comes into town. She sits down on the couch. Everything's normal. All right. She's like, I'm going to relax tonight because it's Wednesday, and then we're going to have her work Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So I go to work Wednesday. She's on the couch. Previously, she had just mentioned to me in passing that the last time she was in Orlando, it was because of her boyfriend, who she was dating, Chris Kirkpatrick of NSYNC fame.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Now, I don't know these guys necessarily by name except Justin Timberlake and Joey Fatone. Now, this guy's around a little bit. I had met him before because, he lives in Orlando and he's one of those local celebrities that kind of shows his face here and there. Nice guy. I was like, yeah, I'm sure he dated you. In my mind, I'm just like, yeah, I'm sure you guys dated. You know how quote-unquote dating means.
Exactly. So, means he was a patron at Mons Venus when she was stripping.
Along those lines is where my head was at too. So right. So I go to work. That's it. It's Wednesday. Go to work. No big deal. I come back from work, and she is in my bed. Wakes up, and she's absolutely trashed. I mean, like gone beyond trashed. And I'm like, oh boy. All right. Well, no problem. It's Wednesday. So she got into town. She's, all right. So blowing off some steam. She says she's been living with her dad, and her dad is a Buddhist and refuses to let her drink. I don't know if there's a correlation there. Any Buddhists out there who says they have nothing to do with each other? That's fine. I don't know. So she is drunk.
Are we talking this girl got into like your liquor cabinet and like went through a bottle of Beam or went on like a Coke bender?
No, there's no Coke in my apartment still.
No, I didn't mean that. Had Coke. I mean this girl imported, smuggled in drugs from Tampa.
No Coke, I don't think. I mean, who knows? So what I have in my apartment is a bottle of Ketel One that was 3/4 full in the freezer. I have a 12-pack of Miller Lite in cans that is about 3/4 full too. I don't drink alone. I don't drink at home. By no stretch of the imagination am I going to say I don't drink. I drink a lot. Don't drink at home, but, I have some alcohol. And I also had a 4-pack of mini wine splits that I use, when I was – I guess I got it as part of a recipe or something. So I just got, some Chardonnay. So she's hammered. I'm thinking, okay, no problem. It's now 3:30 in the morning. She's up. She's hammered. And I'm like, all right, cool. Yeah, so let's get to bed and, you know, get ready for tomorrow. She proceeds to go into my refrigerator, freezer, get the bottle of kettle out, find some Gatorade, and make herself a nice 3:45 in the morning Gatorade Kettle One mixer. And just downs it. I mean, a full cup. And I'm like, what do we got here? I'm like, this is headed for disaster.
Yeah, it's called vitamin water.
Right. That's Tampa vitamin water right there. So I say, all right, you're going on the couch. I'm going into bed. I got a big day of work tomorrow. I'm going to sleep. You do too, but you don't seem to be concerned. So I'm in bed. I might have gotten an hour and a half of sleep. And an hour and a half into the sleep, I get physically assaulted in my sleep, and she starts waking me up. You asshole, what are you doing? What are you doing, you asshole? Wake up, what are we doing? Let's do something. I'm like, you gotta leave me alone right now. I'm sleeping. These, you know, I'm 41 years old, work until 4 in the morning. You know, back in the day, yeah, you know what? Let's stay out all night. You know, now I need my sleep now, okay? That's basically long story short. So she's doing this, so it's going from violently waking me up to cursing me out, to apologizing, me falling back asleep, and that whole process repeating itself every 20 minutes until about noon the next day.
Awesome.
I am absolutely miserable, infuriated, every single thing. So now I'm like,
I feel you, because I've actually lived that exact nightmare. Different girl, but I've lived that nightmare before, so I feel your pain.
Would it be great if it wasn't a different girl? That would be funny. I mean, so basically now it's noon. I lock my door. I tell this girl, I got to go to bed, but I can't. I got to get you out of here, but I got to go to bed now, so I can't worry about that. I'm locking my door, and that's it. Going to sleep. She banged on the door a little bit for a little while. Then I guess, you know, she got tired of that. So I fall asleep, get about 2 hours sleep. It's like 2:00. I wake up. She's like, I'm going to work. I'm working today. Fuck you. I'm working. I'm like, you're not working anything. You're not – you know what? You're going to stay here, because I know she had no vehicle, no nothing. She can't go anywhere because she wouldn't be able to get back into my apartment because it's gated. So
– oh, just leave her there with the Wall Street Journal and put Jeopardy on. I'm sure she'd be fine.
Exactly. That's actually very funny. So I basically tell her this. I'm like, here's the deal. You haven't eaten, and I feel a certain responsibility to nourish you, and that's about it.
This is where you're a better guy than me.
I'm going – well, I don't want to just – that was more of like I'm thinking legal things right now, like if I starved her out or something. So I basically said, sit on this couch, stay awake, pass out, do whatever you want. I'm going to work. Within 3 hours, I will return with a pizza. I will place it on this coffee table. I will then leave again. I will go back to work, and then I will come home. I will go to sleep. You'll leave me alone, and in the morning, we're going to find a way to get you out of here.
Yeah.
So she's still incoherent, but she, you know, she had no choice, so she, I guess, went along with that plan. Now I go to work. Now, here's where, Stu, I would not have the balls to make this up right now. I would not have the balls to, you know, if I wanted to be a creative writer or if I wanted to write a story.
Well, I've known you for a long time, and I've never known you to make up stories.
No, but, I mean, this one you may think you would. So it's karaoke night. We're having a good time. The night's good. We're at work. Everything's going well. No problems. No issues. By the way, I did bring her the pizza 3 hours later. She was unconscious for that, so I did not have to worry about dealing with her at all. I just placed the pizza on the coffee table and left. Obviously, I just lied because I stuffed 3 slices down my mouth before I left. But that's what happened. So I went back to work. So I'm at work. Karaoke's going well. Still, in walks.
No.
Chris Kirkpatrick and Joey Fatone from NSYNC.
Jesus Christ.
Is that – I mean, I don't even know what to say. They're with a mutual friend, the guy who – is semi-affiliated with our restaurant, and it's not like so out of the realm. Like I said, I had met him before because he is a local celebrity, so you know he does. But I had never seen him since like the second week I've been here. I saw him once at one of the other bars. He walks into our bar, starts singing karaoke. He's doing Vanilla Ice, him and Joey Fatone, and I think another member of the group, or I don't know, or the robot, about four other guys.
Lance Bass.
No Lance Bass. Lance didn't make the trip, or Justin Timberlake didn't make the trip either. But so they're singing karaoke.
Justin Timberlake didn't make the trip.
Yeah, he wasn't able to. He was. Yeah, I think maybe they just didn't call him on that. On the, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They may have just left him out. So they're singing karaoke. They're having a good time. They paid a guy $200 an hour to follow them around and tie balloons into pornographic caricatures. Like a guy with like a dick sticking out, or like, you know, a woman with like a butthole, and you could wear them on your head, and they could like fellate each other. It's a really weird scene. I mean,
it's really the American dream when you're basically the equivalent of backup dancers your whole career for Justin Timberlake. Your career is basically ended at the age of about 30, and you have made infinite money enough to where you can walk around to bars in your hometown and pay a man hundreds of dollars an hour to create pornographic balloon animals.
Yeah, and I'm just going to tell you, I mean, no offense to anybody. Those guys are great dudes. But, I mean, really, dude, Joey Fatone looks like an out-of-work plumber at this point.
Yeah.
Chris Kirkpatrick, and it's embarrassing I'm calling this guy by his name because I know him, you know what I mean? So he comes over, we're like doing shots now, you know what I mean? I'm the GM of the place, and he's in, and I get, you know, the introduction was made, so we start doing green tea shots together, and I can't help it. After like two or three of them, I'm like, do I even mention this? Because she, remember, like I told you, she said she dated him. So I go, hey, I got to ask you something, Chris. Do you remember a girl named Stephanie Jones? And he goes, yeah. Are you talking about Stephanie Jones from Tampa? I'm like, yes, that's the one. He goes, you know her? I go, yeah. He goes, Joe, calls Joey Fatone over. Joe, he knows Steph Jones from Tampa. And they're like, holy shit, how do you know her? I go, you're not going to believe this, but she's belligerent at my apartment on my couch right now. Can you help me get her out of here? Can you get her out of here for me?
You wanted a cleaner.
So he was like, wait, she's on your couch right now? So they were like in disbelief. So her story checked out. They actually, I don't know if it was dated or whatever. It was definitely more than a one or two time thing. They actually had a relationship of some capacity over some elongated period of time. So that was pretty interesting to me that the girl wasn't just a, you know, one and done. She actually, you know, well, maybe I don't know if they dated, but they were.
That relationship existed within the four walls of his apartment.
And he knew exactly who I was talking about right away, but he was shocked that she was in my apartment.
So what did he suggest on how to get rid of her?
So he calls Joey. Joey goes, hey, man, I got a guy who gets rid of, I mean, it was just like a shock to me. I'm like, wow, these guys, it's true. They really have people that just remove girls from their apartments. He actually went into his phone and was like ready to dial somebody up who could help me with this issue. And I'm like, no. I'm not having some guy come into my apartment and remove this girl. No. He's like, no. Don't worry about it. I want him out here anyway. He should be out with us anyway right now. But yeah, he'll do it no problem. And he actually called this guy up. He had his head to the phone. And it just, I guess the guy never answered, so he put the phone down. But just the fact that that happened. So to wrap the whole thing up, I know I'm going to land the plane now. Just to wrap the whole thing up, he basically, they actually kept singing karaoke. We went out. We went home for the night. Done. She was still there. Woke up Friday morning. She was coherent and very reasonable. And I said, Steph, you know what? It was really, really good to catch up. I don't even know if you're aware of what you were doing the last couple of days. She's like, no, I'm not. So I'm like, my suggestion, you know, maybe call somebody, get some help. She was like, almost gave me like the why bother look. And I'm like, all right. So, I mean, what do you want me to do? So I was like, all right, call an Uber and let's go to the nearest 7-Eleven. And,
that's nice.
We'll see you. It was like, a real romantic send-off, right?
Yeah, that's nice. You a romantic send-off in front of the touchscreen at 7-Eleven. You order a shorty. And,
that's Wawa.
Oh, yeah. That's Wawa. It's my hometown of Philly.
Yeah.
I'm thinking I got Wawa on my brain. So you take her to 7-Eleven. You get a prepackaged like one of those rotating egg rolls.
Yeah, or like those sausage hot dog hybrid things that look like they're also like a
– Yeah, it's nice.
Coming off a halal stick.
Jeter gives him autographed baseballs, and you give him the sausage hot dog combo.
Let's be clear. This was not a romantic situation. Not that anybody needs to know. Not that anybody – everybody already knows more than they even need to know. But, right. No, this was not a romantic situation whatsoever. So it was no harm, no foul, out of town, you know. And I have not heard from her since, and that's okay.
Well, I'm jealous. It sounds like you had a much more eventful weekend than me. I wish I had that kind of drama going on in my life.
Only an insane man would be jealous of what I went through that night. But it's all right. No problem. All right, enough of that crap. You know what I mean? Let's get into some of the sports stuff. What do we want to talk about first? The Golden State?
Yeah, I mean, I cannot believe what I witnessed last week. I mean, last night with Game 6. And I'm really looking forward to Game 7 tomorrow night. I mean, I actually thought the Warriors could pull that game out before the game last night. But then, you know, once you got to halftime, and they weren't playing very well, and Oklahoma City looked in control again, I thought it was over. But Klay's performance last night, I was talking to our mutual friend today, Graham Bunn, who played a lot of college ball. So I always turn to him when epic performances like that happen and say, "What, as a basketball player who's a good shooter in his own right, what would you rate that performance?" He said, "All time, one of the best ever shooting performances he has ever seen." I mean, and it took that kind of performance to get them through that game, because Draymond wasn't playing well. Steph didn't get it together until the fourth quarter. And to be honest with you, Durant and Westbrook kind of choked.
What was that? What is it, 10 threes?
11, I think. 11 threes, and all with people in his face. Like with a couple feet from behind the line, and there were points where he wasn't even looking at the rim. He was just catching the ball and throwing it up, and they were going. It was unbelievable. He single-handedly kept that game within reach. You know, it would be 12 points, 13 points, and he'd cut it back down to single digits alone until finally Steph started helping out a little bit in the fourth quarter, and they both got hot. And then Westbrook and Durant conveniently also decided to fold in the last 5 minutes and start throwing the ball away and throwing up bricks. But I think the table is now set for an epic Game 7 now. I really don't know where to go on this one. I mean the spread in Vegas has the Warriors at a 7-point favorite, I think, which I guess you have to because they're the defending champs and they're playing at home and they rarely lose at home. But OKC beat them in Game 1 at home, and they're probably a better team. So we'll see.
There's nothing – I mean, honestly, there's nothing that would surprise me. You can't be surprised anymore, to be honest with you, because what you got is just, you know, the world's greatest athletes at what they do, just kind of going back and forth. Like, you know, it's a Game 7, and yes, it's a 7-point – like, nobody knows more than Vegas. Let's just say that right then and there. Nobody handicaps these games better than Vegas. You know, talk about the former players, the analysts, everybody. Vegas just seems to – just no. I don't know. When there's money on the line, that's the deal. But really, who can you pick? Because honestly, it's just a very simple equation. If Golden State is on like they were in that fourth quarter, they're going to win by at least 7 points. That's what's going to happen.
Because threes count more than twos.
Right. And honestly, but if they're not on, and we talked about this on the last one, you know, the you know, living and dying by the three is just seemed to have been a practice that has never worked up until this team came along, you know. And these guys, if they're just going to be raining down threes, there's nothing anybody can do about that. It seemed to be that Oklahoma City had a solution for that and an answer for that in that just overly athletic Westbrook and just the length of the rest of their team. And it seemed like, okay, we got the formula. But it just shows you, you know, it's like for the rest of the series, was the, you know, the Splash Brothers off, or was it a result of the defense? So anybody who thinks they're going to predict this thing or knows which way it's going to go, I don't buy it. Honestly, what I think you're going to get is just an ultra, ultra, ultra inspired effort by Westbrook. Durant's going to be Durant. They probably did think they had to do too much in that last game towards the end and really probably got a little frazzled at the end. And yeah, I mean, you want to use the word choked? I guess, yeah, they tightened up and that's what happened, you know? And it's just a matter of, you know, these guys, they're going to throw up threes. And that's the signature, like you said, not even looking at the rim. that's kind of like what they do. That nobody, you've never seen anybody else in the NBA do that before at the level that they do it. Like just video game like. You know what I mean? Those, some of those shots.
It is. It's like Graham said, pushing a button. So it is a video game, and I was literally watching and texting my brother on every possession, saying, "Did you just see that? What is happening here? I can't even comprehend it. It's so fun to watch."
I thought that arena, what do they play in Golden State, was gonna explode, was gonna go down. I thought it was gonna collapse.
Oh, and all the fans watching it at Golden State on the big screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. So. I mean, I don't know. I honestly, if you're gonna push me to a prediction, I'm gonna predict the Thunder, because I just think that you're gonna get such an animalistic, you know, just, you know, to the death defensive effort from Westbrook, and I think those two guys are gonna score enough, and I guess I'm banking on these guys being a little bit rattled and being off because they were on the last game. So I'm gonna predict. But you know what? I don't freaking know, man. I don't know.
I'm going to go the opposite. I'm going to go Warriors just because I'm going to predict with my heart, because I want to see Steph versus LeBron so badly, a rematch from last year's finals, because the Cavaliers were not at full strength. They thought the Warriors win had an asterisk because they played a less than healthy team in Cleveland. And with Steph winning the first unanimous MVP, you know LeBron takes that personally. He made a couple comments in the media over the past week about the difference between most valuable and most outstanding. So I would really like to see those two go head to head. But and again, yes, I don't think Clay's going to hit 11 threes, but Steph hasn't been Steph for this entire series. So when's he going to erupt? He can hit 15 threes tomorrow night.
Yeah, well, again, that's the question. Has he not been Steph because he's not Steph and he's off?
Right.
Or are they just you know – you know, in his jock strap as his third nut.
I think both.
And this speaks to something else too, because I was just going to change my prediction, but not really. I don't know. Again, like I said, I have no friggin' idea. But I wanted to just kind of contrast something, like we talked about Steph versus Cam Newton. Let's talk about Steph versus LeBron. And here's why I really think LeBron, honestly, only has – he has two rings, right?
Yep.
He's got two rings when he's been to six straight finals.
This is his sixth in a row.
Yeah, this is going to be his sixth in a row. And honestly, no, not six straight finals, right?
Yeah, I think six straight finals. Yeah.
I guess it was six straight, yeah. You know, did you see that press conference with the three of them the other day? LeBron, Kyrie, and Love?
When they were all giggling?
I mean, that's what I'm talking about, man. Seriously, when I look at athletes and when I choose people that I want on the teams that I root for and follow, I call me like whatever, you know, I look into their eyes. I try to watch their mannerisms, watch how they speak. When you see Steph in an interview, he's got that eye. He's got that Kobe mentality. He's got that Jeter mentality. He's got that Michael Jordan mentality. He's got the same thing. You know what? When they ask him questions, he's just popping off whatever is genuine in his heart and throwing it out there, take it or leave it. And you know what? Of course he's guarded. They're all guarded. But he's basically like, you know what? I'll answer your questions. That's it. Now I'm getting back to what I'm doing because I'm focused. You know what I mean? You could tell. There's just a look in his eyes. What's your question? What's next question? You know, when you got LeBron and these other guys up there, LeBron is like the A-Rod. LeBron is seriously calculating his words because he is so aware of what the public's perception of what he is about to say is. And he's not speaking genuinely. He's not coming from the heart. He's giving you some answer that he thinks is going to be the perfectly crafted answer, or the way to make him seem like, you know, very thoughtful and unique or profound or whatever you want to say. And that whole thing was a joke. They're throwing stuff at each other. You're going to tell me that is a championship team? I mean, he may win. And if he gets a couple more, and the ones that he already has, is because he is the most inhumanly talented basketball player, a physical specimen ever to walk the earth.
Correct.
And he's winning off the sheer just talent that he had, that he was God-given. But
as far as mental makeup, I agree. I mean, it's Steph, like, I completely agree with you in that Steph sort of exhibits what Tom Brady does and what Jeter did, and that he's never too high when he wins and he's never too low when he loses. And You see the same kind of answers at the press conferences after a victory and after a loss. Whereas LeBron walks into a press conference after a victory and they're clowning around, making jokes. After a loss, they don't want to answer questions and they're pissed off that they even have to be sitting there. And I just don't get that. And Mike Greenberg at ESPN, who I love and I watch a lot, tweeted last night, you know, after the game, I wonder if Durant and Westbrook are going to be laughing at the press conference after this one, because they did the same thing the other night when they won. They were giggling, laughing, threw a little shade on Steph being a terrible defender. And I just don't get that mentality. And that's why they don't have rings.
I guess so. That's the you know, and it's one thing if they start out their career like that and then they mature into it after their first ring or two. LeBron doesn't seem to be getting it. I don't know, but whatever. I'm excited too, man. I am overly excited to see this. And you know, I have not been locked into a non-Knick basketball playoff season like I am this year, so I'm looking forward to it too, man.
Yeah, and so we'll the next podcast we'll know who's playing in the finals, so we'll touch on that then. I also watched some good baseball over the weekend. Did you happen to catch any of the Dodgers and your former hometown Mets?
Yeah, I saw the highlights. Didn't watch the game, but I saw those highlights. I think I know where you're going with this.
With Syndergaard and Utley?
Yeah.
I mean, to me, and tell me if I'm wrong, and maybe this is the Philly guy in me being an Utley fan, but I just love Utley's reaction to that whole thing. And that's just the purest example of baseball policing itself. Utley takes out their shortstop last year in the playoffs, breaks his leg. They got to get him back. Syndergaard embarrasses himself and throws behind him, obviously trying to hit him. But Utley, unlike Bautista, you know, doesn't walk toward the mound, doesn't throw a fit, just literally puts his head down, digs his spikes back in, and gets ready for the next pitch like nothing ever happened. And when questioned about it after the game, he didn't even want to address it. He just said, I'm glad we got the win. And that's just old school baseball. He knew it was coming. He accepted it. He embraced it. And, so I respect that.
I do too. He's wrong for that slide. That slide was fucked up. That
oh, yeah.
Was
no, out of no control. Question about it. No question about it.
But yeah, so I definitely think, you know, all right, cool. I mean, it was embarrassing. The catcher couldn't even get his glove on it. It was behind him. You don't even know if he was trying to hit him. You know what I mean? Because if you're trying to hit him, you would have hit him. And I want to talk a little while about this documentary I watched. Bob Gibson had a quote in it, and we'll cover that in a little while, but he had a quote in it. He's like, you know, everybody said I tried to hit people. I tried to hit people. No, I didn't try to hit anybody. When I was going to hit them, I freaking hit them. Yeah. You know what I mean? And this is almost like it reminded me of that pathetic attempt of the Mets to throw at Roger Clemens a bunch of years ago. Remember that? What that was?
Yep.
Was that 99 or whatever it was, or 2000, something like that? And they threw it behind them, you know. They didn't even have to move. Clemens didn't have to move. Utley didn't have to move. It just embarrassingly went right by him, and he didn't even acknowledge it.
Yeah, I respect it.
Yeah, I agree with you too. That's kind of the way to handle it. Did you hear he got kicked out of the game? Did you hear Dwight Gooden was there? Because I guess that was the day that they were celebrating the 86 team.
Yes.
Yeah, so Dwight Gooden walked out of the stadium when Syndergaard got thrown out as well.
Gooden left because he was pissed about it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He left in protest into the top of the third.
Doc, man, that's old school. And that Doc was on that 86 staff, and that's one of the staffs that you hear guys like Smoltz, some of the greats of the game, throw around and saying, if there's ever, you know, this staff the Mets have assembled with Cologne, Harvey, well, not so much Harvey right now, but Syndergaard, DeGrom, Mats, and Wheeler when he's back from rehab, as one of the greater staffs of all time, or could potentially be. They're still a young staff, but that 86 staff with Gooden and Darling and Fernandez as being one of those staffs that you could maybe put in that kind of conversation.
Yeah, no, definitely. These Met, you don't know what this Met staff is going to do, though. They should be way better than the 86 staff because they are basically littered with number ones. You know what I'm saying? The Met staff in 86 had a phenomenal staff. But there was one number one. That was Dwight Gooden. I mean, everybody suited their role. They were just, you know, who was it? It was Dwight Gooden who was the number one, and he was the clear-cut number one. Ron Darling was number two. You had Terry Leach, who was a number three or four. Who else was it? Sid Fernandez.
Fernandez.
Yeah. Sid Fernandez, that's in the, you know, so these guys all filled out their roles. But what you have here is, I mean, four guys who could potentially be number one on any staff.
What's wrong with Harvey? What is wrong with him?
I think you're dealing with another situation of a guy, like I just alluded to before, who really does not – he doesn't have the mental makeup at this point. You know what I mean? I'll say, you know, who knows down the road. I mean, maybe he will. But at this point – and the thing with him is, you know, he's not a kid anymore. He's 27, 28 years old or going to be 28 years old.
Yep.
And it's time for him to, you know, stop talking, stop throwing the word potential around. So, yeah, I know it's a little bit late, but I'm looking him up right now. If you had to guess and you had to tell me, he's been in – you know, he debuted in 2012. What do you think – how many total wins do you think he has?
Oh, Jesus. So 2012, 13, 14, 15, so four years?
Yeah. Well, is it 4 years? No, because he well, he missed a full year, right? He missed.
Does he have 50 wins?
He missed 2014.
Does he have 50 wins?
No. You're talking about a guy who is, let me see, age 27. He's got 28 wins.
What?
28 wins.
Yeah, and he's talked about as the second coming.
Right. You know, he's the Dark Knight, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's the thing. The other thing with him is that he's just very interested in other things. He's interested in girls. He's interested in going to the hockey games. He's interested in, conflicting with the brass in the front office. My favorite moment of his, when I knew he was basically a bit of a dummy, was when he called the Dan Patrick Show. And, of course, he's in the middle of his, you know, stint of being on the DL for a year, talking about his Tommy John surgery. What do you think people are going to want to talk about? Dan Patrick handled it with more class than I think most people would. So he calls up, and I don't even know what Matt Harvey was pushing. But Dan Patrick answered the phone. Hey, so thanks for coming on, Matt. Appreciate you calling into the show. What's the status of the Tommy John rehab? Well, Dan, I'm not here to talk about that. I'm here to talk about whatever power bar or supplement, you know.
Well, isn't that convenient?
So he just kept saying it over again. Well, can we talk about, you know, at least where you are right now or how you're doing? How do you feel? Again, Dan, I just told you I'm here to – and Dan started to be like, well, Matt, I have to – you know what, Matt? Go ahead. Just let us know. What's the deal with your product? And he gave him a 30-second platform to just push his product. And then he politely said, all right, Matt, thank you and good luck in your rehab, and I look forward to seeing you back on the field.
Well, and probably the best thing that he could have done.
I mean, not me. I would have freaking annihilated him. But then when he did get off the phone, he talks to his, you know, the Dan Patrick setup. That show is a little weird how they have to raise their hand like the little – have you seen it on TV?
I love it. I love it. Yeah.
I like it too. It's
the Danettes behind the glass, yeah.
Yeah, the Danettes. It's like a school classroom situation and he calls on them. It's a little weird. That's so weird to me. But I guess – so he just starts talking at them like, you know, Colin does to his hot chick. And he's like –
Christine Leahy.
And he just kind of started just like making fun of him like somebody needs to get a hole of Matt. And I explained to him that that's not how this all works. And, you know, so he said it after, but he didn't embarrass him to his face, or maybe he just didn't want to. I don't know what it is, but he kind of, when he got off the phone. So that's what I'm saying. That's Matt Harvey's where you know, the operation, anybody knows that. Nobody, you do for me, I do for you. You call up, you give a little bit of inside information about what's going on and some team stuff, some progress stuff. And then in exchange for that, you get to promote whatever you're promoting. You know what I mean? So it's not like you just call up and you know what? I'm just going to, you know, tell you about metrics or whatever the hell he's pushing or whatever it is. It was very embarrassing. It was like you get – it was like douche chills. You know what I mean?
That's how he is with the media. And I read an interesting article. Guy named Wallace Matthews writes for
ESPN. Oh, yeah. I've been reading him since I was like 11.
Yeah, and he was contrasting Harvey versus Pineda on the Yanks – your Yanks.
I didn't read this article, so if you could fill me in.
But the gist of it was that both are 27, both coming back from arm problems. Harvey with Tommy John and Pineda with, I think, a torn labrum. And you know, both struggling right now. I think they both have ERAs around 7, but just the contrast in how they're handling the situation, and Harvey is ducking for cover and won't talk to the media and hides after the games, and Pineda, with the help of his translator, takes on every question, you know, says how he has to do better and he's working through this and blah, 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 blah. And it's funny, I'll read you a quote from the article. He basically said that in reference to Harvey, there's a word for someone who's a tough guy when things are going his way. The word is bully. And there's another word for a tough guy who disappears when things go wrong, although it's not fit for print. And I think the word is pussy. And that's what he is. He's a tough guy when it's convenient, and when he can stand at his locker after a win and talk about how great he is. But when he's given up 3 home runs in 5 innings, he doesn't want to be around. And I don't respect that.
No, me neither. That's interesting because Pineda, I didn't read that article, and I'm very familiar with the Yankees, as you know. But it was interesting because when Pineda was in Seattle, traded him for the catcher Mateo. Both, you know, blue chip type prospects. Pineda had already accomplished some things, was an all-star in his first year with the Mariners, but really kind of imploded the second half of the year, that first year. So that was a straight-up trade. Pineda shows up to spring training and, you know, playing in Seattle for the first couple of years, had no idea what to expect. Comes in after his first outing as a pro and doesn't realize he's in New York now. Actually, he's in Tampa, but New York media is on the scene. His locker gets surrounded with flashing lights, microphones, and reporters screaming at him, asking him questions. The man just ran out. He ran. He ran out of the room. He just ran. He literally like ran, and it was like a big story for a day. And then the next day, he came back and said, "Hey," through his translator, as you say. I did not know that how it was. And I do apologize. And ever since then, yes, you're right. He's been kind of a stand-up guy. But that worried me about him that first day when he just literally just took off like he was being chased.
That's a cultural education for him.
Yeah, as opposed to Randy Johnson, who basically punched somebody in the chest his first day in New York.
Man, I miss him.
He's like, get out of my face. Harvey is just, you're right. I think he's just a head case too. And I don't know what his deal is. I don't know what's wrong with him. But everybody's like I don't know what he's pitching poorly right now. Now, everybody's saying he has sports talk radio. Should we put him on the shelf? Should we DL him? Should we give him some time off? I don't get it. What are you supposed to do? This guy is you're supposed to be the face of your franchise. He's going through a slump. Why would you even be talking about – if he's healthy, he's saying he's healthy. The team's saying he's healthy. You don't just not start him. I don't even understand what that debate is about. Like,
I guess the debate is he's obviously a mental midget and a head case right now, and so he needs some change to boost his confidence. So whether that's one minor league assignment, although I'll play devil's advocate, I don't know how striking out a couple guys in the minor leagues is going to boost your confidence, because you got to know in your head that it's not the same caliber of talent. I've heard everything from that to literally taking all the contents of his locker, setting it on fire, and having him come into the locker room with a brand new locker and new uniforms, almost symbolizing a fresh start.
You know, I left that out. That's what Chris Kirkpatrick from InSync told me to do when this girl left my apartment. He said
to set it on fire?
He said the minute she left, he looks at me, he grabs my both of my shoulders, looks at me, goes, "Dude, when she leaves, there's only one thing. Set your apartment on fire. Burn it down to the ground."
That's a savage move.
Laughing my ass off. But, yeah, man. And as far as those guys, man, I don't know. I never liked Harvey because I kind of just got that head case vibe off of him, that ego vibe, that bully type vibe off of him. Despite how talented he is.
I don't think he has the makeup necessarily to be somebody who I'd build my team around when you got all those other guys to choose from.
I would definitely, if I had to choose to not sign one of those guys when they're all going to be demanding all this money, that would be the guy I would reluctantly let go, despite his talent.
You have to at this point.
Yeah.
Have to.
You know what I just saw, actually? I was, I love these documentaries. This documentary, it was on iTunes, called Fastball. Amazing, amazing documentary. I love it.
I'm just a baseball guy when it comes to a lot of people that knock baseball to me. I get it. You know, you could consider it to be like, you know, slow sport or whatever other, I guess, criticism you have about the game. There's not enough action or whatever. But baseball is just such a there's just a pace to baseball that lends it to have such nostalgia. They say the beauty of baseball is that, you know what I mean? Like you can, you know, there's a lot of breaks in the action, and that gives the broadcasters to basically be like talk show hosts where they can kind of reflect and talk about just a game that just has such a rich history and is so stat driven, despite the fact that it's a little bit marred by the steroid era. It's still, to me, just a, you know, not to be cheesy, but just one of the more romantic sports out there if you can get into the pace of it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And what they were going into is like the fastball. And there was some fascinating stuff on there if you're a sports or more specifically a baseball nerd I have been over the years. What they were saying is basically what it was is I guess they featured maybe like six or seven throughout the years of the best power pitchers that there were. And anybody who was alive, they had. They also had a round table that they would go to every once in a while that was pretty credible names on it too. When it was Hank Aaron, Derek Jeter, George Brett, Johnny Bench, and these guys just sitting around talking about hitting. And some of the things you got from this thing were, you know, some of these guys, Walter Johnson, they talked about Goose Gossage. They did a feature on Chapman. They did a feature on Bob Feller. Who was the guy from the Dodgers that was just a nut job? Who's the guy in the Dodgers? Bob Gibson.
Yes.
You know, Kimbrell. Stuff like that. And they would do a feature on each one, and then they would do hitters describing it. So the interesting things you got about Nolan Ryan, interesting things. They're saying right now, and they had scientists in on it too, kind of like just talking about like just the fastball in general. They're saying that it's getting to the point where it's almost impossible to say that a hitter can react voluntarily to a ball that's in motion. What they were saying was that, you know, you'll have, you know, you looked at Hank Aaron, you look at some of these guys that they were interviewing, they're saying, you know, some of these guys have a rise to their fastball. They absolutely, their fastball rises. And their scientists were absolutely debunking that, saying that there's no way it rises. And these guys would just look into the camera with the most comfortable look on their face. I don't care. You know what? I'm not here to argue with science, but I'm in that box. And I'm telling you right now. Some of these guys' fastballs rise. And it's interesting because what the scientists say about that is that the human mind looks at the difference between a 90-mile-an-hour fastball and a 100-miles-an-hour fastball. And there's way more people that throw 90 than throw 100. So coming up through the years, you look at the ball coming out of the pitcher's hand. Now, in no way, shape, or form can the human mind stay with that ball the whole way through. It's just not possible for the eye to get that message to the brain to where you can even understand how to watch that hit your bat. So what they say is basically when it comes out, you automatically have a perception in your mind based on the trajectory that you perceive that to be coming in. Your mind, yeah, you already have decided where that ball is going to be. So you think you're watching the ball the whole way, but you're seeing it. But you're basically going right to, okay, here it is, here it comes, that's where it's going to be, put my best swing on it right then and there. Yep. Now, that's what happens with a 90-mile-an-hour fastball. Now, what they decided and what they figured out was that a 90-mile-an-hour fastball gets to the batter, gets to home plate 4.5 feet behind a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. And what they say what happens with, 98 to 100-mile-an-hour fastball is that you make that decision. So you're looking at the ball coming out of an 100-mile-an-hour pitcher's hand, and you're mentally projecting where that is going to be and where your bat has to be. And because of the fact that it's at 100 miles an hour with much harder backspin off the four-seamer, that you're just miscalculating where the trajectory is going to be. It's not diving because gravity takes effect a lot harder on a 90 than it will 100. And you're basically swinging at something that, in essence, perceivingly disappears before your very eyes. And it's not really rising. What it's doing is just not dropping at the level
that you're used to seeing a ball drop at.
That makes sense.
And they just that they can't wrap their mind around that. These hitters say, no, I don't care what you say. I watch it and it's rising. It's just a fascinating topic. Science versus people kind of really in real time trying to pull that off. And it was just it was just funny, just showing how through the years that they've tried to measure how fast balls are going. The first attempt was this guy Walter Johnson, who was in like the teens or the 20s. You heard of him or no?
No.
So he's just like a pitcher that basically, you know, when they used to wear freaking dress shirts to the games, he said he's like the fastest guy that ever pitched a ball. And they put this military, like this World War II military machine up for him to try to pitch with. And there was no way to really figure it out. But the modern scientist perceived that it came in at 83 miles per hour. And at that time, that was the fastest thing that they had ever seen. Then along comes Bob Feller. And I guess that's in like the – was it the 40s or something like that? I actually forgot. I don't know. It was the 30s or 40s maybe, 30s or 40s. He actually – they tried to figure out how fast he threw the ball by racing a motorcycle against his pitch.
Oh, it sounds very scientific.
Yeah, exactly. But they actually did it, and they saw that coming in at 93 miles per hour based on what they – the equipment they had at the time. And then you had Nolan Ryan. And Nolan Ryan actually, wait, hold on. Then I think Bob Feller actually they designed a contraption that basically sat in front of the catcher, and it was a little machine that he threw it through that basically at that time told you what the actual miles per hour were between, you know, that machine. And that was I guess identified to be pretty accurate, and it was basically, again, it was like around 93. So they thought Bob Feller pretty much threw around 93. Then Nolan Ryan, when he came along, they had radar, but it was a primitive form of radar, and they clocked him, and it was a historic event. They actually, you know, stopped the game to give him accolades or whatever. He threw the ball at 100 miles per hour, and he basically at that moment got crowned the hardest thrower in the history of baseball. It was fascinating to see. However, so now you got Aroldis Chapman, a guy like that who throws 105, right? So what they realized off of all this, these calculations had to be redone as well because of the fact that they were measuring the ball as it got to basically the catcher. You know what I mean? Like basically at the batter's box. Now, we already know that the ball, no matter how fast you throw it, is not as fast when it hits home plate as it's going when it's 50 feet away from home plate. And everybody that's on radar today, they're clocked at when the ball leaves the pitcher's hands, which is right around 50 feet away when you factor in the extension. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Are you with me? I know I'm being real nerdy right now, but this shit really fascinates me. So they redid those calculations. All of them they redid. And they're like, you know what? We have to if we're going to make it accurate. So what they found out was Walter Johnson back in the day in the freaking 20s or whatever threw 92 miles an hour. And that's ridiculous for the 20s.
Yep.
And then Bob Feller, the whole motorcycle routine, and they redid his and, you know, basically how fast would it be coming out of his hand right away? 107 miles per hour. And then they did Nolan Ryan. So when he threw 100 miles an hour – and that was being tracked at the basically right up against the batter's box or the plate. If you would have measured that right out of his hand, 108 miles per hour. So you're dealing with Nolan Ryan. If he was put on a radar gun today with that pitch he threw that day, 108 miles per hour.
Insane.
Insane. I mean, that was just fascinating to watch. You got these guys doing, you know, equations and conversions and this and that. And
there's still no way a fastball rises. Think about that logically. It's impossible. Can't happen.
You don't think so?
How can that possibly happen? Unless you're throwing it from the ground.
Yeah.
And there's a point before gravity takes hold that it loses velocity and height, and then it will fall. But if you were throwing it from, let's say, a seated position up to a first baseman standing at 6 feet tall, then it's going to rise.
Yeah.
But pitchers on a mound that's higher than the batter's box, and he's throwing down, There's no way it can go down and up. It doesn't make any sense.
No, I agree. And honestly, if a scientist is telling me, I'm gonna believe him.
I think originally said is right, that they're used to a ball dropping quicker at 90 miles an hour than it does at 100, so it's an optical illusion, and the 100 ball, while remaining flat, looks like it's rising.
Yeah, but you literally could not tell these old-time hitters. They were so comfortable in what they were saying. They were just like, not even like, oh, I don't think that. Man, I don't care, honestly, what those scientists say. I watch the ball. It rises. They're off on this one. And it was funny to watch them because they are absolutely like these. You know, these guys are just the best in the world at what they do. They must have eyesight like a hawk. And they're telling you that they're wrong. They're telling you the scientists are wrong. I don't care what you say. Fascinating stuff. Enough of the nerd stuff. But I just wanted to note, do you realize how many years Nolan Ryan pitched for?
Nolan Ryan?
Yeah.
What, about 20 years almost?
Stu, first of all, he was his own closer. Basically completed all his games in the beginning, yeah, at least. He pitched for 27 years.
Are you serious?
His last game was when he was 46 years old. By this time they had the radar all straightened out. You knew what he was throwing. He walked off. He threw his last pitch. He blew out his elbow or whatever it was. He just an injury. He knew it immediately. Basically just said, yeah, she's done. His last ever pitch at 46 years old was a 98 mile an hour fastball. And then he just proceeded to blow out his arm, tipped his cap, walked off the field and said thank you to everybody and never returned to the field again.
Yeah, he's a savage.
I mean, that is just a man. That's the last of a generation. That's the last of a freaking, you know, oh, man. The guy's 46 years old, throws a 98 mile an hour heater, blows it out. Most of these guys now, you blow out your elbow like that, you know, you're going to be in some pain. The guy barely even winced. He just basically said, yeah, I just did it.
I'm done. That's it.
Man, it was great, man.
Grabbed an ice pack, put it on his elbow.
I'm looking forward for you to watch that thing. I definitely want to recap that with you when you see it. But I think just throw it on, see if it catches. Now, me and you, we don't always agree on stuff. We're watching stuff. I'm fascinated by a lot of stuff, and you know, you could take it or leave it sometimes. But I think this one, you know, being a baseball guy, I think you'd jump all over this one.
I will put it on my list. But yeah, we don't always agree. But the most important thing we agree on is West Wing being one of the greatest shows of all time. I know we were bound to be friends when that happened. We can do a whole podcast on that at another time.
Oh yeah, the best network TV show ever made.
Yeah.
What else did we want to talk about?
I wanted to just quickly touch on, just to recap. We had mentioned the possibility of the McGregor Mayweather fight in our last podcast, but I heard Teddy Atlas, who if you know anything about boxing, is pretty much the authority on anything boxing that I listen to. And he was asked about McGregor's chances against Floyd. And he basically just laughed and said that, you know, he was posed a question, if he were to train McGregor to fight Floyd, what would he do? And he basically said he wouldn't. He wouldn't train him because he would have no chance. But he said if he had to, he said he would need 5 years of consistent nothing but boxing training for him to even – have a possibility of stepping in the ring with Floyd. That's how outmatched he would be. And even then he doesn't think he would have a chance.
Yeah. I love the sweet science. I'm into boxing. I'm not as into it as I used to be because obviously it's not whatever. I guess I bandwagon that too, but cause it's kind of fallen off. But, the big fights I really, really get into. I get into the 24/7s. I get into the fight lead ups they do on Showtime.
Yeah. I love them.
And the reality is yes, Teddy Atlas is the guy that I've seen has the best handle on, you know, what's going to happen. And I think I said it to you last week and I'm of the opinion. That it would just be a mismatch in terms of just boxing. I said in my mind, I was like, the only way that anything could happen is that if McGregor just had too good of a chin and had no fear of Floyd knocking him out, then I guess maybe anything could happen And if he just went in blind and was had the luxury of being able to kind of expose himself so he can kind of just slug it out with Mayweather, maybe. But in my heart, I was like, that's the only chance he'd have. My gut told me that Mayweather would just put on a clinic to him. And honestly, hearing that Teddy said the same thing just basically wraps it up for me. That's all I need to hear. And I agree with that.
He basically said Mayweather's, a lot of people would say that McGregor just has to rush him and just bull rush him, but Mayweather being a counterpuncher, he just wouldn't hit him. So Atlas said if he was strategizing with him, it would probably be to try to get Floyd to attack him and come at him,
which we know would never happen because Floyd happened, just doesn't do that.
Try to be the counterpuncher and then kind of like okie-do, him into, a fake out where he like kind of like fakes a body punch to Floyd and then catches him with a lucky hook to the face, but Floyd is too smart a fighter, and basically Atlas said it's just unless it was a grappling match in which Floyd would have no chance, straight boxing, he you're talking about a class A fighter, all time great in Floyd, and a guy who just doesn't have the training to fight someone of that caliber.
Floyd Mayweather is he's basically like what he is Ken Griffey Jr. He's the evolution of his father and his uncle. You know what I mean? Like Ken Griffey Sr. played for the Yankees and was a solid hitter, and then just made his son into just an all-time great. And this is what these guys did. I mean, they're just a family, and they were poor too. Believe it or not, they were freaking professional fighters. Prize fighters, and they still, going to jail, getting shot up. Roger Mayweather, Roger and Floyd Sr., guess, depending upon who's talking to who at the time, alternate training Floyd. Yeah. And that's just a family that just since they said in interviews, like in the barbecues, the family barbecues, they just put gloves on the kids and throw. And if you watch the 24/7s,
they're one of my favorite things to watch of all time.
They got little money. Little money is in there fighting it out, and he's like 5 years old. So they just come up from a family of just natural lifers when it comes to boxing. And, yeah, like you just said, too smart of a fighter. It's just instinct, man. The guy is just that good. Again, I don't know if he could hurt. I'm sure he could hurt him. I mean, and people forget Floyd knocked the shit out of Canelo, and Canelo's looked at to be like, right now – the top 3 pound for pound that's out there right now. And Floyd basically had his way with him. Canelo didn't have a chance. Floyd Mayweather is an all-time great. It's a shame that he didn't come up in a different era where there was more competition. But if he had, he probably still would have been the best. He just is an all-time great fighter. You know what I mean? He never had the whole, knockdown dragouts where they had that four-way rivalry with Marvin Hagler, Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, and Thomas Hearns. And that was just the golden age of middleweight, welterweight boxing. You just didn't have that nowadays. It's just whoever they could put up, and every 3 years you'd have somebody who was semi-worthy, whether it was Pacquiao, whether it was Canelo, or that British guy. What the hell is his name? Whatever his name was.
Yeah,
but it didn't. It just never happened. So yeah, I don't think. I mean, again, at the same token, Floyd would absolutely, his life would be in danger if he tried to go MMA against Conor. So it is what it is. What else were we talking about? I guess that's it, right?
I kind of wanted, right before we sign off, I wanted to maybe introduce a segment that we make kind of a consistent thing in our podcast, and just something that we can title "What the fuck is wrong with you?" and just talk.
So this one's for the kids, right?
And just throw out a few.
The hell are you doing in construction over there? Was that a buzzsaw?
Just throw out a few names of people, topics, whatever that struck you this current week as just being complete assholes, douchebags. Just just to make you kind of think to yourself.
What were you thinking?
Well, the first one that jumped in my mind was this zoo story in Cincinnati.
I just saw that today. When did that happen?
It happened a couple days ago.
Okay.
Where a 4-year-old slipped into the gorilla cage. How is a parent do you let your four-year-old get anywhere near a place where you can conveniently slip into the cage of a gorilla? And I don't know if you've seen the video of this.
Yeah.
It's disturbing. It's disturbing of this gorilla dragging this child around a river.
Yeah, well, the first thing, I mean, really, I mean, I agree with you what you said. There's not anything disputable about what you just said. But I don't give a shit about anything. The first line of responsibility is there should be no possible way for this to happen, right?
Correct. I blame the zoo for there being any way, even for the most derelict of parents, to allow a child or anyone.
The most acrobatic of children,
yes,
should never be able to get into this.
Yeah. Thing. David Blaine should not be able to get into the cage.
Yes.
So, yeah, blame the zoo first. But then after that, blame the parent. Child services should be called. But, you know, and then you have this poor gorilla has to lose his life because some parent can't keep their child in plain sight.
Yes.
And the same thing happened in Chile where some nut job apparently wants to commit suicide.
Yes.
Heard the story?
Yeah.
Gets buck naked, leaves a suicide note, and jumps into the lion's cage. And this guy's getting mauled before they have to open fire and take out all the lions.
But they didn't know he was trying to kill himself, right? No. If they knew that, they probably would have let it go.
They should have let it go.
Well, going back to the other thing, the other story that you're talking about. First, yes, I think absolutely that is just insane. Every day that this place opens, they should check again and recheck the ability for anybody to get into that or any animals to get out of that cage. Because yeah. I don't know what else your job should be other than keeping those animals alive than to keep people safe. So, yes. Second of all, it goes deeper still, man. That kid got in there. I can't tell. I don't have children, and I'm not going to judge anybody, and I don't know what the deal is. But I don't know if you could have kept me out of the cage if my child.
I'm in the cage. If my child's in the cage, I'm in the cage.
Yeah, you're going in the cage. You're going to take a shot. You're going to grab the child, and you're going to run for your dear life, and you're going to try to get out of there. I mean, think about living your life after that moment, knowing that you watched your child get devoured or ripped apart or whatever gorillas do. You know what I mean? Like, but the mom was just on camera. You heard her. I love you, baby. I love you. Good luck. You know, I mean.
Unacceptable. You're in the cage and you're running interference.
Yeah, running. Exactly. I mean, I don't know. And buying time. Now, here's the other thing, though. Here's what's pissing me off, and I don't know how you feel about this. Having said all that, having said every bit of that, they did what they were supposed to do. You shoot the girl.
Of course.
Well, you know, not everybody says of course. There's a lot of people.
Well, PETA, of course.
Not even PETA. I'm at lunch with a girl today, and she's telling me, first of all, that shouldn't have happened. She had like three or four different arguments, but I basically rebutted all them, and she kind of came around. And she's like, first of all, these are stupid parents. And you know what? I'm like, okay, yeah, stupid parents. But he's like, well, they could have tranquilized them. And no,
apparently not. It wouldn't have worked quick enough.
Well, again, and yeah, and what do you think the hell is going to happen when a freaking – if it's a delicate situation – he gets hit with a tranquilizer and there's something in front of him that he may suspect that did it. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
These are dumb animals here, you know, God rest his soul. But, you know, I mean, you gotta shoot the thing down. You have to. There's no other way around it. You can't. Oh, you know, I heard people say that too. Well, it didn't. The gorilla was trying to protect the kid. You didn't know. Screw you. Honestly, again, agree with everything. The zoo should be in deep, deep, deep trouble. The parents should – something should happen to the parents.
Oh, they should have to pay reparations to that zoo or whatever to
– whatever it is. I don't know. You got to buy – I don't know. What are you going to buy him a new gorilla?
Yeah.
But you got to shoot that. Unfortunately, a sad, awful situation. You got to shoot that gorilla. Did you see that thing, man? What a beast. What a powerful specimen. Just think of that gorilla, man. That gorilla – can line up with Ray Lewis and basically take his claws on either shoulder and rip Ray Lewis in half.
You would drag Ray Lewis around just like that kid.
Yep. Man, what an impressive, impressive creature.
Yeah, I feel bad for it. And I love animals, but I'm not the world's biggest, PETA supporter. Yeah. But I felt bad. I felt bad for that thing.
Of course. No, you can't, you know, it's very, very sad that animal had to lose its life. There's no way around it. But really, people, let's not put it out there that, you know what, we should have rolled the dice with this one and see where it went. You know what I mean? The kid was in serious danger. That child was in serious danger. And be realistic. You shoot the damn gorilla, unfortunately.
Yeah. My opinion on the adult that jumped into the cage in Chile naked, even if you hadn't found the suicide note, you see that he's naked. You see that he's yelling religious crazy stuff. And you see that he's an adult. I might let that go. I may have watched him maul that guy.
Yeah. Sorry. Well, you know, it's a good thing. You know, we're going to end these shows on such uplifting topics.
Yeah. And I got lots more on my list.
I'll you got more?
No. Let's do it. We don't have to go through them tonight.
Let's try one more.
Bangers get off about what the fuck is wrong with you. Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds, who apparently Jock Peterson this week, outfielder on the Dodgers, apparently recently walked up to Barry Bonds. They were playing the Marlins. Barry Bonds is his childhood idol. He was really excited that they were playing the Marlins, and he was going to get to go up to Barry Bonds, his idol, and get a picture with him. And he walked up to him during batting practice, and he got big leaked. Barry Bonds, he said, hey, Mr. Bonds, you're my childhood hero. Can I get a picture? This is a professional baseball player asking a now colleague of his for a picture. And Bonds looked at him, turned aside, and just ignored him, turned the other way. And Jock Peterson told the story on FS1 this week. And as I said, he just felt so awkward. He just stood there for a little while and then just walked away. And he said he doesn't even remember how he played the game. He was so distraught. Bonds since apologized, of course, claims that he didn't even realize that happened. Must have not heard the guy, which is obviously complete bullshit. Because why would this guy – this guy didn't tell the story like there was a chance that Bonds didn't hear him. He walked right up to him. So it's just – I don't know how a guy like that who's been given a second chance to make money in a game that, you know, he probably should be out of. And for him to have that kind of ego that he's too good to take a picture with an up-and-coming guy who looked up to you – just pisses me off.
Yeah, that's a joke. Huh? That's a joke. I mean, honestly, it's a joke. It's disrespectful. It's another black mark on, you know, just what most people already kind of know about that dude. He's just, I don't know. I don't know the guy, but from every indication you get, from every commentary you hear, guy seems like a little bit of a bad guy. You know, maybe I don't know what's in his heart. I don't know. Maybe he's a good family guy. Maybe he's, you know, but he seems like a bit of a dickhead, no?
Greatest hitter probably of all time in that season when he hit 73 home runs.
Yeah, with the asterisks, though, you know.
Yeah, with the asterisks, but it was one of the cooler spectacles I've ever seen in sport. So, but as what happens with many greats, talented, unbelievable to watch, and unfortunately they don't carry that same amazing persona off the field. As people, you get that with Tiger Woods. You get that with a lot of people that are just, I don't know. They have to be a certain way to be at that kind of level, and they don't know how to handle themselves. Thank God this new generation of guys like Jordan Spieth, who won again today, by the way, with the most impressive back nine I've seen in a long time, sinking 30-foot putts all over the place. But he's not like that. And it's a new day where people have learned to, you know, embrace people off the field and be human beings. But you got guys like Barry Bonds who couldn't turn off that switch, and Tiger Woods, who I read an article this week from another guy on ESPN, Wright Thompson, talked about how Tiger Woods, what the fuck is wrong with you? In the prime of his career, after his dad died, decides he wants to be a Navy SEAL, which is all well and good. You can be a nut job and want to be a Navy SEAL when you're the best golfer in the world. That's fine. But After taking advantage of months and months and of training trips with these guys in the hills of San Diego, these SEALs putting him through boot camps because he's Tiger Woods and he wants to do it, and taking care of this guy on their time, making nothing. They go out to dinner Wright Thompson writes in his piece. They go out to, he goes out to dinner with like six SEALs, and the check comes, and they're all kind of staring at each other, and these guys are waiting for Tiger Woods, billionaire, to pick up the check. He just sits there. He just sits there, and one of the guys says to the waiter, "I guess separate checks." I mean, what the fuck is wrong with you, man?
Yeah, that's another joke. Another, I mean, ridiculous people. I heard Barkley and Jordan used to hang out, and they would all go walk around, and Barkley would have to follow Jordan around with like 20s because or hundreds or whatever, because Jordan was just notoriously alligator armed, and he would never tip anybody. And Barkley was always cleaning that up. So some of these guys just really have no concept of, you know, anything. It's a joke, man. It really is. Some of them just really, like, you just watch it. I mean, this is a pathetic thing to bring up, but even if you watch the, if you ever watched the Kardashians, and I'm not gonna lie to the world, okay?
Put Rob Kardashian on my list of what the fuck is wrong with you. I mean, put most of that family on that list, but Rob Kardashian, I don't, we can get into that another time, but put Kardashian on that list. What the fuck is wrong with you? Continue.
My point is, if you watch that show, you just get a bird's eye view of just people who are just so far removed from reality. Like, you know, it's ridiculous, you know. So, I mean, it's probably similar with a lot of athletes who just really have no clue on how to handle it. Some of them hold on to who they were, and some of them can actually continue to have, I guess, some sort of a connection with reality. But a lot of them just completely fall off in that regard, you know.
Tell me this, though. If you had infinite money, not even infinite money, let's just say you had a lot of money, enough money that you knew that, like, you're not even a billionaire like Tiger Woods or LeBron, but enough money where you're one of these athletes and you've made tens of millions of dollars and you're never going to have to worry about money for the rest of your life. I would never let anyone pay for anything. Friend, family, anyone in my vicinity, they wouldn't pay. It would give me pleasure. It would give me joy to take care of people. So it is so foreign to me how these guys with infinite money, like more money than they could possibly spend in their lifetime if they even tried to spend it, how the fuck these guys don't get it. And they're such penny pinchers. I don't understand it. I don't get it. Can you explain it to me?
No, I can't. I can also say the only thing I could say is that a lot of times they also in the other direction, you know what I mean? They're just buying a bunch of stuff. They probably have a ton of hangers on. I don't know. Maybe it's financial advice that they're getting. You know, people are kind of like making that a hot button issue with them, saying, you know, you're going to have people who want you to buy this. And where does it stop? I agree with you because I don't have a ton of money and I still over tip. And I always, no matter who I'm with, I offer to pay the check, or, you know, hopefully, you know, they say money is currency. It comes around and goes around. If, you know, you spend it, you know, it comes back to you. And just assume, you know, you offer to buy some dinners here and there, you know, and one day somebody else is going to insist, you know. So you don't know. I can't figure out myself, let alone the mind of a freaking athlete who probably grew up most of his life semi-poor and all of a sudden has millions and millions of dollars. I have no idea. But, yeah, it's just, it seems a little – there's a lot of audacity there. I agree with you in terms of when people just don't have the common courtesy to just, you know, take care of, you know, small bills. I mean, what is that bill with those six Navy SEALs? What is that compared to Tiger Woods's, you know – is he going to even recognize that anything, any difference in his bank account, the meter is obviously not going to be moved.
He makes more in interest a day than all those guys combined will make in their lifetime. Like, I mean, that's what it is. And it just, I mean,
that's a hell of a perspective to look at it. And it's absolutely true. You're right.
The opposite end of the spectrum is a guy like Jordan Spieth, who won today at Colonial. And on the 17th fairway, he hit a ball into the trees to the left and he got lucky. It hit a Marshall in the foot and kind of kicked closer to the fairway, so he got a lucky break. But when he got to his ball, he knew it had gone into the gallery, so he addressed the crowd and said, "Is everybody okay?" And he said, "Who did I hit?" And the Marshall said, "You know, it hit my foot." And Spieth said, "Thank you," because he knew he got a lucky break from the bounce. And then he signed his glove, Jordan Spieth, thanks, and walked over and handed it to the guy. I mean, that's just so – there are good guys in sports. Tiger Woods, Barry Bonds, just aren't two of them.
It's a gentleman, just a pure gentleman.
So that's just a little introduction of where I want to go. Maybe, you know, at the tail end of each of our podcasts, kind of just a brief "What the fuck is wrong with you?" segment. It doesn't even have to be about strictly sports. It can be about entertainment figures. It can be politics. It can be
somebody who just pissed you off on the way to work. Anything. Yeah, just somebody who did something stupid and made a move that's just like, you know what? What the hell is this guy thinking?
Yeah. So food for thought. And as we gain viewership, maybe our listeners can write in some suggestions on people that have pissed them off that week.
Absolutely. And in the weeks to come, as we tighten this up, you know, guys, just remember, if you're out there listening, this is our second show ever. We're definitely doing our best. We even already feel better about the second show than we do about the first. And I'm sure 6-7 shows from now, we're going to feel even better. Once we start rolling a little bit, we are going to put all the bells and whistles out there. We'll have the Facebook page. We do want to make it interactive so that you're able to, you know, tell us we're out of our minds, or, you know, fuck with us a little bit here and there. Please. And have a little bit of back and forth too. But we're certainly having a good time doing this so far. Still, it absolutely is good catching up with you on a Sunday night, brother. And good hanging out, man.
Absolutely. Thanks again, everyone, for joining us for our second episode of Trash Talk. Happy Memorial Day weekend. Thank you to our servicemen and women out there protecting our freedom.
Hell yeah.
So jerk-offs like Tommy and I can sit here and do a podcast on a Sunday night.
Absolutely. Very, very well said, my brother. And thanks, everyone, and we'll talk to you next time.